It's time for Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. With nationally recognized nature writer and award-winning horticulture and nature expert, Bill Finch. Bill shares his knowledge of conservation, natural history, and gardening. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with your personal garden and nature consultant. Here's Bill Finch on FM Talk 106.5.
Hey, welcome back. Welcome me back. I'm here. I'm live. I'm thinking about Hollies. Hollies and I, we go back a ways. You know what a holly is. Let me tell you, it's interesting. I look for hollies along the roadsides, like many other plants. And I'll see a holly one year, and I'll think, and I'll come back by, and I'll look for it again on the roads, and it's just this big mass of green. And I'm thinking, God, I know I'm going to see that holly in there. I mean, the berries have already got to be turning colors, but it's still this mass of green, and I think maybe that holly's not there anymore. But these are special hollies. They're not evergreen hollies. They're deciduous hollies. They're hollies that lose their leaves. And when they do, something incredible happens. And so I have to wait until the cold air is starting to seep in under the door, which it's already doing now. Boy, I feel it on my legs. You're going to feel it soon, too. And that cold air is going to strip the last of the leaves from much of that brush along the roadside. And even from the hollies themselves, you're not going to see any more leaves. But what you're going to see is what makes those hollies so magical this time of year. It's those red berries just covering the stem, just standing out like, how could I have missed that? How could I have missed it? It's so bright. It's so intense. It's like each little berry is lit on those limbs. And there are thousands of them on the branches, on the roadsides. There are thousands of them in the fence rows back in the woods. There are thousands of them in the woods themselves, and I'm seeing them now, these berries everywhere. And I have to wait for this time of year when the leaves are all stripped and the woods are all bare and the green is gone and the cold is seeping under the door, and there are these beautiful holly berries. just amazing. Every December you gotta wait for it, but when you see it, you just won't miss it. We should talk more about hollies. You know, Alabama's got a lot of them. They're all around you. We have hollies in our yard that come from China. We have hollies in our yard that are hybrids of plants from China. But in the woods, there are all these beautiful native hollies. There's the evergreen holly, which we see a lot of on the Gulf Coast and throughout Alabama, and I really love it. It's just our most beautiful evergreen. I don't know why people don't use it more. I mean, I guess we've kind of taken the magnolia as our evergreen, for better or for worse. But gosh, hollies, what a beautiful, beautiful evergreen. And much more dependable in many ways than a magnolia, and much easier to live with in your yard than a magnolia. But the evergreen holly, beautiful thing. Ilex opaca, the Native American evergreen holly. But you know, there's a bunch of other hollies, and they're really neat too, and they're going to start showing up this time of year, and they're the things you look for when the leaves drop. The Ilex decidua, the deciduous holly. There are beautiful red-berried versions of it along the roadsides, beautiful orange-berried, beautiful yellow-berried. Alabama has got to be the center for variation in color in those Ilex deciduas, the deciduous hollies. There's the long-stalked holly. which my wife really loves, which look like the berries dangle off the stems like little earrings. It's really, they're really beautiful. And they hang off the stem. And then there's the there's that holly that has the strangest looking fruit that is just, it's hard to describe the color of the fruit. And it really is only seen along the coast. And the colors are this beautiful red, but it's like there are layers of red in that fruit. And it's this beautiful thing, the service berry holly, Ilex amelanchier. You'll see it in swamps. It's an incredible thing. And then there's, the Latin folks call it the ambiguous holly, Ilex ambigua, the Piedmont holly, the holly of good clay soils from the Red Hills all the way up into North Alabama. Beautiful, large berries all along the stem, very glossy, very pretty. There's the mountain holly as well. It's an incredible thing, all these different hollies in Alabama. There's the swamp hollies, like Ilex verticillata, which you see around, Blakely in the swamps there. Incredibly beautiful. All these different hollies in Alabama. We ought to be thinking about them more. We ought to use them more. I'm not sure why we don't. Oh, gosh, there's inkberry holly. I almost forgot about that one, which is this beautiful blackberried holly that has great foliage that's actually really nice to be used in yards. And, of course, who could miss the yaupon holly? Yaupon holly has the wonderful Latin name of Ilex vomitoria. Don't hold it against it. It's the holly that we use oftentimes as small shrubs in front of our houses, but the buried ones are the most beautiful. And there's some really beautiful things. It's called Ilex vomitoria because it was one of the teas that was used by a lot of our native First Nations, the Choctaw, the Coasati, the Alabama, the Creeks, the Cherokees, too, more than likely, and certainly the Chickasaws, the Iowani. They were all using these Pascagoula, I shouldn't forget them, and the Biloxi. They were all using the black drink, this beautiful drink made from hollies. And they mixed it with purgatives and other things, and that's how it got the accidental name vomitoria. But it's actually a really wonderful drink. And now people are beginning to produce teas made from our native Ilex vomitoria, which is not at all. It's really quite delicious and a wonderful thing. You should look for it and try it. We've forgotten about hollies. It's the season of hollies. We'll have to think about them more. We'll be talking about that today. And somebody tells me it's getting cold. Something tells me it's getting cold. My legs, with this wind blowing underneath the door. Wind blowing so hard, it's almost blowing the door open. It's coming your direction. It's going to be a fierce one. You may want to know what to do about it. We talk about it a lot. I may ask you to tell me what we do about it, if you've heard from me enough. But give us a call today if you have questions about that. 251-343-0106. 251-343-0106. We'll talk about this cold. We'll talk about your yards. Goodness gracious, I hope we'll talk about hollies, because with this cold spell and all the leaves dropping and the woods just as bare and frigid as they can be, you're going to see those berries, and they're going to brighten your day. And it's the season of hollies all throughout Alabama, so we'll talk about that. Give us a call. We're back live. We'll be able to answer your questions directly. All you got to do is text us. Just text us just like you would making a phone call, 251-343-0106. You can also give us a phone call. Love talking to you. Keith is getting excited to see that we may be back live. We'll talk to you. So give us a call, 251-343-0106. Look forward to talking to you this morning, and we'll get ready for the cold. Oh boy, there's some beautiful berries from a plant that I didn't mention. Ilex Cassine.
Me and my best friend Lillian in her blue tick and all Gideon, sitting on the front porch, cooling in the shed, singing every song the radio plays.
Welcome back to Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast with Bill Finch. Ask Bill about gardening and nature in your backyard. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. It's Gulf Coast Sunday morning. It's an Alabama Sunday morning. Lots of red things going on out there, and people are reminding me of that. So we've got some great pictures here. Let's find those pictures again. There we go. So pictures of a red berries on a vine. Growing in a tree that is, I can't quite tell what the tree is, but maybe osmanthus, or what used to be osmanthus. And the question was, is that smilax? No, it's not. It's probably snail seed. Carolina snail seed is the common name that you see in books. And I will forgive us for using a name like that, because if you open those berries up, and you can do your diagnosis by doing this, open those berries, kind of break those berries open. They're really beautiful berries, no question. Really dense clusters, and if they're getting lots of sunlight, it'll just be super conspicuous. But inside those red berries is a little seed that looks like a curled up snail shell. Take a look. It's really cool. But that's, there it is. That's what we're looking at. And getting lots of what is it questions. I'm going to take a look at them this morning. Let's see. start over from A. Bloom. All four Satsuma trees died last year. So he was, Keith is going to be starting back with his Satsumas. And, you know, we've got, as David reminded me a few weeks ago, we have a problem, and we don't think about this enough. It's going to be harder to get Satsumas and oranges in the future, and lemons and limes, because we're under a quarantine now. And more and more of our citrus growing counties are under quarantine. You know, we've almost lost citrus. We've almost lost citrus from Florida as a commercial crop, and nearly as something that people can grow in their yards because of citrus greening and citrus canker and other problems. So be very careful about where you get your citrus from. We need to be thinking about that in the future. We're going to lose our ability to grow citrus. We're going to lose our citrus trees if we're not careful about where we get them and where we're planting things. If you get them from a flea market, I would worry about where they came from. You want to get your citrus from as reputable a source as you possibly can. And that's going to be even harder now because of these diseases. But if we don't think about it just a little bit, we're going to run into problems there. So let's think about that. B-Dark, what you've got is what a lot of people call a pencil cactus. My goodness, I don't remember what, and you can see why it's called a pencil cactus. I don't remember even the Latin name for it. It's been a while since I've thought about pencil cactus. But any rate, look it up as a pencil cactus. It'll tell you all about it. And you can call me back and tell me the Latin name, which I don't remember. Looks like it's doing pretty well. Looks like I don't need to tell you what to do with it. You're doing fine. You're doing fine. I don't know how much cold it'll take either, but I would not keep it outside on a cold day like this. All right, let's see here. Got some messages back from Don. Yeah. So, yeah, sorry, Don. You know, sometimes it's good to take a break. I think I've been doing this show. Oh, I was thinking it's close to 15 years now. Maybe more, maybe less. I'll have to sit down and think about it again. Boy, it goes back to just about the time I got my new bicycle. That's how I remember things. I must have been working at the Mobile Botanical Gardens. I was at the time. And we started the show. It was kind of an idea Sean and I hatched. And I suggested it to Sean, and he bit. We started slowly and delicately. And I talked for an hour and thought, boy, how am I going to get through this hour? And then Sean, being the nice guy that he is, says, oh, you ought to talk for 2 hours. Which presents quite a challenge. But we work through it. We have fun. And we try to answer your questions. So feel free to give us a call this morning. We'll try to answer them. This is, I guess we do need to talk a little bit about this cold weather coming in. It's one of those cold spells that there's not as much difference between North and South Alabama with these cold spells. It's just a cold air mass that's coming in that's going to settle over the whole state. It'll be about 5 or 6, maybe 5 degrees colder in North Alabama than it is in South Alabama. But that means South Alabama, particularly around Centerdale, you're going to be looking right at 20 degrees, 21 degrees. In places where the sand around Centerdale gives up its heat really easily, it could get even colder. So we'll watch out for that, particularly if we lose the clouds in the evening. What do you do about this kind of cold? And I will tell you, because of the wind that's going to accompany it, young citrus need protection. They're going to need protection. You're not going to have. It's harder to replace the citrus than it used to be. Protect your young citrus. Go ahead and do it. You can do it with. If you've got young citrus, you don't know how to protect them, give me a call. I don't want to go through the whole talk again if it's not of use to you. But, you know, you can do it if you've got bags of leaves. Just drop those bags of leaves around them. Put some water in the leaves, bags of leaves, and some fertilizer. Yeah, you should have done that 2 or 3 days ago. But still, just put a little water in there. And in those bags of leaves, and put them around. They're in bags, and put them around that citrus. That is just one small thing you can do if you've got a small citrus. It can really help. Putting a tent around it is more important, even more important. You want to make a tent around your young citrus that holds the heat in. But at the very least, you want to protect that base. And if you can't do anything else, take some dirt and build it up around the graft at the base, just above that graft, just so you can pull it back, but that will protect that graft from these kind of cold temperatures. You really don't want to have to start over at your graft, which means that your top part of your citrus is going to die. It's going to be very slow to come back, particularly young citrus. But this is the kind of weather that young citrus will need protection. They'll need some protection. And your banana trunks at this point will need protection if you want to have fruit next year. You'll need to give them a little bit of protection. If you've got some bananas and you want to know what to do about that, well, you can give me a call. We can talk about it, and we'll go through that. A lot of other plants are going to survive just fine. But these, in Alabama, we sometimes think we're warmer than we are. We're amazingly warm compared to the rest of the country. But we grow things that are marginal here. And so we have to think about them during these freezing temperatures.
Along about 1825, I left Tennessee very much alive. And I never would have got through the Arkansas mud if I hadn't been a-ruddin' that Tennessee stud.
You get Plain Talk on Plain Living. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with Bill Finch. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk 106.5.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning. It's an Alabama Sunday morning. Several questions about citrus are coming up, so and they are very useful. We've got so somebody sent me a picture of a citrus that has nice size orange fruit on a very bushy plant. The plant didn't look carefully, but I'm sure the plant has some pretty ferocious spines on it. And if I looked closely, the leaves on a lot of the leaves are in groups of three. They're like little groups of three, little tight little groups of three, sort of like a three-leaf clover, if you can imagine that, on the plant. What is it? The fruit tastes terrible, the caller says. And this is trifoliate orange, trifoliate three-leafed, trifoliate three-leafed. It's got a new Latin name. Don't make me remember it. But here's the thing. These are rootstocks. These are rootstocks that are used for the citrus varieties that people want to grow. They're not really designed to be eaten themselves, as you're seeing. And I've heard of people using them, but it's an effort. It's an effort to eat these guys. Don't even bother. And plus, they're pretty invasive. So you don't really want to scatter them around. And what use are they? Well, if you fall into them, I don't know. They'll aerate you pretty nicely with those big, thick thorns. I guess if you're a kid, you can throw fruits at other kids, which is the kind of thing I would have done when I was a kid, because we used to have fruit wars all the time. I don't recommend this, and don't let your kids listen to any of this, because I think it's probably not the greatest thing in the world. I mean, you could hurt somebody throwing fruits like this, but they're not any good. Trifoliate orange. They're just not the kind of things you want to keep around. So my recommendation is kill it. Kill it. And then the question is, well, what kind of citrus should I have? And I would say a Satsuma is the one you always should start with if you're along the Gulf Coast. And Owari Satsuma is fine. Brown Select Satsuma is fine. A Satsuma is a great place to start. Don't do it this winter. Wait until spring. Get it from a reputable source, because we're going to have diseases that are going to keep us from growing citrus. And yeah, I got to say, it's real. It's very real. And if we're not careful, we're not going to be able to grow citrus anymore. But Satsuma is where you want to start. I would get rid of that tree. If you were good at grafting, which I'm pretty sure you're not, because you would probably know what that tree is if you were, you could graft onto that, but I wouldn't do that. I would just get rid of it and cut it off. Take a little bit of, spray the top of the trunk. You can just use regular Roundup. It's even better if you can find a little bit of Garlon 3 and just spray on the top of it, and it won't sprout again. There it is. What else we got? Jim in Georgetown has a question about Limequat, which I'm going to get to. But meanwhile, I have a caller. Steve, let me look. It's Kitty, right?
Yes.
Kitty, are you there?
Tell me
what's up.
Well, I have a blood orange tree with about 4 dozen oranges on it. It's about like the first crop. And I wanted to know, should I pick it? They are beginning to turn pink, so they are ripening, and I think maybe the end of this month. But should I pick them tonight or before this freeze?
Kitty, tell me something. Are they in the ground or are they in a pot?
They're in the ground. And they're in a protected niche, like the west and north winds are blocked by my house. So it does quite well. I mean, it's not a very big tree, not a very old tree. And it had a lot of oranges. It was so exciting to watch.
Yeah. So here's what I would do. One of the interesting things about blood oranges is that they really don't start tasting good until January and February. And that's true for a lot of the best oranges, and even grapefruit, is that they don't really mature until January and February. And then we get these intense cold spells just as they're beginning to ripen, and it really is a quandary. So what do we do? Here's what I would, so normally I would say, yes, you can pick them. They're not going to have the best flavor in the world.
But they're pretty good.
They're okay.
They are pretty sweet.
Yeah, so go ahead and pick them. Here's the other thing you can do is to pick half of them. And this is what I often recommend. So if you think you have them in a place where it's extra protected, if you pick all of them, you're not going to eat them all anyway because there's too many, and they'll go bad. So
I thought I'd give them for Christmas presents. How many people get blood orange?
Right. Well, if Christmas came a little later, they would be ideal Christmas presents. But here's the thing. Pick half of them and leave the other half on there to ripen just to see if they will make it, if they will continue to ripen through this cold. I would say in most cases, I wouldn't even bother because it's going to be too cold. But if you say you're in a protected place, which it sounds like you are, you may have enough heat there that they won't freeze through and they won't be damaged. If they freeze deeply, I mean, a larger fruit like that, it takes a lot to freeze it. That's the good thing. The bad thing is that they really are very vulnerable to freeze, and they get mushy, and they're not as good after they freeze.
Maybe
you're in a protected place, and they may just make it through. Some of them
would it be of any use to cover?
Yes, well, certainly it would. How big is this tree?
10 or so feet. 12 feet.
Yeah, so you could just about do it. I would say a blue tarp would work really well. So take a blue tarp. Remember that, and Kitty, I'm glad you called. We can go through this. Remember that you want to make a tent, not a balloon. You want to make a tent. So you want that blue tarp, just pull it over the top and make a tent so that it captures the heat underneath.
Touches the ground.
And touches the ground and captures the heat underneath. And it's the heat from the ground that will keep it warm.
Okay.
And I would think at these temperatures, that's probably going to be a pretty good bet.
Yeah, I don't know that I've ever known it to get this cold this early.
it's unusual. We're seeing this more often, and of course, I would love to dance around why that's occurring, but you know, it is evident now in our climate, and it's something we're going to have to adjust towards. Is that generally our winters are getting warmer? They're getting much warmer. Most days it will be warmer, but we're getting these odd cold outbreaks, and that's because Arctic temperatures are less stable to some degree, and the stratosphere is less stable than it used to be, and so we're getting these cold outbreaks that are a bit unusual, and we're going to have to learn to live with them. I think being able to cover things like blood orange is a really great thing. I will also say, for things like blood oranges, which tend to take a long time to ripen, unlike satsumas, which ripen just about the right time for our climate, blood oranges take longer. And so one of the things I highly recommend is putting them in a pot. And you don't have to bring the pot in and out of the house. That's the great thing. And I kept mine in a pot for a number of years, and it was very successful. And eventually you get a bigger and bigger pot, but you can produce a ton of blood oranges that way if you get a big enough pot. And then when you get these cold spells, you know what you do? You just tip the pot over, lay it on the ground, and cover it. And you cover the whole plant, and you got the ground heat, and it works really, really well. So I would certainly recommend doing that. I would recommend doing that even with limes, which are very sensitive to cold. Ideally, you might bring them in, but I would say on the Gulf Coast, you could even do that with limes. Just put them in a pot, lay that pot over on its side, cover it, and make sure that nothing's in around it. And it's so simple that way.
And then uncover it quickly.
And then uncover it the next morning, you know, as soon as it warms back up, and set it back upright.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Kitty, hey, report to us.
Yes.
You have to call back and report on how your
blood oranges. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
If I could, I'll send you one.
All right.
Okay, bye-bye. Well,
bye. All right, what else we got? We're about to run out of time in this one. Let's see. I'm working through Keith's messages, which I have to interpret, so I won't try to do that right now. But what else we got? Who's on the board? Let's see. Here we go. So, okay, I'm sorry. I'm just having to read through. I'm entertaining myself with people's messages from Keith, trying to interpret them, which always takes a bit of time. B-Dark is forgiving me, apparently, for my absences. B-Dark has what a cute little place there, B-Dark, with a nice little dog. And a nice little pencil cactus, which she's going to use for a Christmas tree, which I think is a fine, smart thing to do. Kind of a fun thing to do. She's had it for about 5 years, and it was about 6 inches tall when she got it. So, yeah, she's taking good care of it. I think you'll probably need to change the soil in there, because they really do like good drainage, and not as sensitive as some of the succulents, but they'll really want good drainage. Let's see what else we got here. So I got it. Don, I know. Don, I'm catching up. I'm going to be there. So I'm going to have to read through, as soon as we get a break, Don, I'm going to read through all of your suggestions and questions and try to pick on some of them. Raised beds now, how should we protect them? Yeah, that's an interesting question. We'll be back.
back to Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast with Bill Finch. Ask Bill about gardening and nature in your backyard. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah. So, Dan said he saw a documentary about kudzu in the Southeast. I can't remember whether I've done a documentary on kudzu. I will tell you that I know several people have contacted me about that. They never want to hear what I have to say, which is that kudzu is not a major threat. It's not a huge threat for anybody. I mean, compared to most other things that are a threat in this world, like citrus greening, like privet, like emerald ash borer, which is about to eat up all of our ash trees, like even multiflora rose, like, oh gosh, kogon grass. I mean, these are huge issues. And kudzu doesn't even rate. And why we see kudzu as a big problem is all about the crazy, weird way we look at the world, which is through our car windows. Isn't that a shame? Isn't that a shame? So, we don't see what's behind the screen on the road made by the kudzu. And kudzu, even now, is really hard to find. I remember as a kid driving, we used to, because that's the way we grew up, driving in cars, driving from Mobile to Jackson to see my grandparents. And I remember all those old roads. You remember all those old roads up through Loosedale? You remember all those? You remember them? Oh, you're not old enough. It's before we had four lanes. And you had to cross the railroad track there at Loosedale. And you had to make all these little winding turns. And it was a great ride to Jackson. And on the way, you could see kudzu along the roadsides everywhere. And you thought, gosh, it's taken over the world. But, you know, when you got out of the car, it really wasn't there. And it just along the roadsides. And that's an interesting story, and we'll tell it. Maybe we'll tell it in the next hour if you persist. But, let me talk about, I got a caller, and I want to get to it, but I wanted to talk a little bit about loquats. Because Jim has one, and Jim, you know, they are very hardy. Much hardier than typical limes, and worth holding on to. I would say that loquat will do fine in the ground, but Jim, don't put it in the ground now. The fact that it was in a pot when it got cold was tough. I mean, that's hard, you know? You made it particularly hard on that plant. But I think it'll survive quite well in the ground, and that's its virtue, is that it is a limequat, which is a cross between a key lime, or a Mexican lime. And a kumquat is very hardy, and that's its virtue. So here's what I would do. Try it in the ground. Go ahead and try it in the ground. But do it in spring, of course, and protect it that first winter if it doesn't grow much, so that it has enough bones on it to sort of survive the cold. And but it's a cool plant. It's a good plant and should be hardy. I would say it's going to be hardy down to the, it should be hardy. I bet it's hardy down to about 18. Probably as good as Satsumas. So give it a try. Put it in a protected place. Don't let it get a lot of wind. Let it get on up. It's a cool plant. Let's see here. What else we got? We better try Paul. Paul, what's going on? Paul, you there?
Yes, sir. I'm doing great today. How are you doing?
Good. When does the cold weather get to Americas?
This afternoon, it's going to be dropping from about 12 o'clock on, and tomorrow morning is supposed to be 24, but sometimes it can be plus or minus four when the you know, on the weather prediction. So
that's
somewhere
right.
between
that's
20
right.
and 28 tomorrow.
Yeah, that's
so,
right.
So we're going to have a hard freeze. I've got a Japanese maple my wife gave me for her anniversary. It's called Firefall, and I put it in the ground about a month ago, which to me that's a great time to plant a tree.
Perfect time for Japanese maple,
And it's a 1 gallon, probably maybe 2 foot tall. Do I need to cover it or do nothing to it?
No. It'll be fine. Okay. Japanese maples are pretty hardy. They're from, they're from kind of the central northern part of Japan. It's where a lot of those were originally developed from many different types of maples. But they have pretty cold winter temperatures there. And they have good long regular winters and snow and everything else. And if anything, most Japanese maples need a little more cold than they get in our coastal plain areas. But it should be perfectly happy and perfectly fine, and you definitely don't need to cover it.
Okay. One other question on the cool night. I've got a little makeshift greenhouse attached to a back building. It warms up. It'll probably get 80 in there today with the sun.
Right.
I've got a little, one of those little space heaters that looks like a radiator. Those things are very efficient. What I hear everything in the world from 30 to 40. What would you set a temperature on a cold night? Because I'm just trying to keep it from getting freezing in there.
How low can you let your greenhouse go? Well, what have you got in your greenhouse?
I'm looking at geraniums, hibiscus, a tree called a powder puff, lantana topiary that I made, duranthas, oleander, wide variety.
So I would say some of that will tolerate down to 30 and below, and some of it won't. And some of it may start losing leaves at 36, 38 degrees. So because you have a wide variety of things, I would want to keep the temperature up around 40. Just some of those plants, they'll survive at 30, mm-hmm. most of those that you describe, but they're going to lose their leaves, and that may not be what you want. So if you wanted to keep your hibiscus leaves on there pretty well, I would, particularly for some of the more tender hibiscus, and even things like Duranta and some other things that are going to want to lose their leaves at temperatures around 30 degrees, I'd keep it around 40.
Okay.
And you don't want to keep it too hot, because then you're basically, 40 degrees will be good for them all. But I would try to keep it around 40.
Okay.
It's always a trick, is what is the best way to keep a greenhouse warm? And there's many, many different techniques. But you're probably right. Those little radiators, like a DeLonghi, those little Italian sort of look like little radiator.
That's the ones I have, and I'm not advertising for them, but those are so much better than the knockoff ones, based on the amount of metal that's there, which actually makes the more metal better at radiate.
Right, and they're good heaters, and not as and pretty efficient for what you're doing.
Thank you,
Paul. It's good to hear from you over in Georgia. Paul is. We're going to be back here in just a minute.
We fired once more, and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
On down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
It's time for Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast, with nationally recognized nature writer and award-winning horticulture and nature expert, Bill Finch. Bill shares his knowledge of conservation, natural history, and gardening. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with your personal garden and nature consultant. Here's Bill Finch on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning. I hope the signal is working just fine. So You know, you get me back. And then we got... It's like the radio doesn't want me back.
Well, Bill, we're actually working on the radio signals fine, but we're just working on the online portion. We had some power surges, so we're trying to reset the equipment now.
Yeah, there you go. So radio's working great. We are having some problems with the internet and the app. Sorry for that. And it was a power surge that set them off and apparently was repeating things. Isn't that bizarre? There it is. Hope everybody's able to tune in. Let's see what we got here. What other questions we've got that we wanted to get back to this morning? Don had asked me about protecting raised beds, and it is a point, and I would say at these temperatures, I don't think raised beds are going to be that much more vulnerable for most plants. If the temperatures are brief, then non-raised beds. But I wanted to find raised beds, and this is a big question. And Don, help me on this, because on the Gulf Coast, it's good to raise your soil level about 6 inches. It probably doesn't hurt to raise soil level up to 12 inches, if for whatever reason you wanted to do that. And it probably doesn't make a lot of difference. That ground might actually heat up a little faster in winter. It probably cools down a little faster, but probably the heat up maybe even offsets the cool down a little bit, particularly in spring. But here's the thing. When you have a bed 3 feet high or 2 feet high, you're asking for trouble in a lot of different ways. It's like having a big container, except with a big container, I could lay it down and cover it with something. I guess you could do the same thing with a raised bed. And there might be a virtue in doing that. I don't know what's in that raised bed, but if we're talking about a raised bed that's, say, 2 feet or 3 feet high, then you are exposing it. You're exposing those roots to winds. There's a greater chance that the cold will penetrate deeper into the soil if the winds are getting to it on the backside in particular. So, yeah, would it help to cover it? Maybe. The insulation of the ground is much more significant than the insulation of that blue tarp, however, I will say. So you're not going to get the same effect as if it were closer to the ground level, which is going to keep that ground from freezing. But, here's my thing about those raised beds, and we keep coming back to this, and I don't mean to be... I don't mean to be annoying. But here's the thing. I'm just telling you, you're asking for trouble when you start raising beds up to 2 and 3 feet high. There's no need to. It's very expensive to do. They're harder to manage. If you put tomatoes in there, you're going to have a ladder to get your tomatoes. Right? If you got okra in there, boy, what a problem that is. It would only be useful for things like, even from the thing of sort of getting it down to eye level, it would only be good for things like carrots, maybe. Maybe it would make carrots easier, but the problem is, for carrots, is that they're going to dry out a lot faster, and carrots don't like to dry out faster. So don't raise those beds quite so high. Unless you really, really have a good reason for it, is my thing. Now, raised beds, hey, let me come back, Don. Raised beds 6 inches, 12 inches high, don't worry about them. They're going to be fine. They're well connected to the ground. They're not losing a lot of heat compared to the rest of the ground around them. Wouldn't worry about it at all. Other than, the normal worries that come with growing plants in a cold situation. And so Keith says it looks like we may be getting it back, our reception. So thank you. Let's see what we got here. I got a on a new good morning. I want to know what to plant in a new bed, full sun, 5x7. Thank you. Oh, Lord have mercy. Well, so Lord have mercy. Let's say, tell me what kind of house I want to build. I don't know. I don't know. But you know, here, there's all kind of possibilities. Help me out a little bit. Do you want to grow vegetables? Let me know. Do you want to grow ornamentals? Let me know. Is this in full sun? Let me know. Is it in shade? Let me know. Is it, do you have, if you want it to be ornamental, do you like certain colors? What would I do with a 5x7 bed? Yeah, I don't know. I might throw leaves on it, build it up, plant some tomatoes in it. I might probably, more appropriately, I would probably think, God, it's a great place for peppers. I love peppers. They can be ornamental, too. That'd be great. And then I might change it out to cabbage. And if that's what you want to do, go from peppers to cabbage, that's great. If you wanted to make something pretty there, oh, there's so many possibilities. And it just depends on how big you want that pretty to be. If you're going to grow annuals, you have to think about, oh, well, we got a long growing season. That's virtually all year long. So how do I fill those spaces up in 3-month increments? Is one way to think about it. Full sun, evergreen, flowering plants. Okay, good. Well, that gives us a start. So now we got evergreen flowering plants. It's full sun. Boy, there's so many possibilities. I always, you know, just in terms of things that are easy and evergreen, you always want to start out with things like rosemary. Rosemary is a great thing, and if it's not too wet, it's a great place to plant rosemary. Build the soil up just a little bit. Maybe add some, a little bit of soil, or certainly add some pine bark to build it up just a little bit, just a few inches. And have rosemary along the front, which is a great flowering plant and a great evergreen. And just all around that nice textural plant, isn't it really nice? And on top of that, you can use it in the you know, or you can just walk by it and rub your hands through it and smell your hands when you walk past it. Ooh, isn't that nice? All those nice phenols, really cool. So that would be great along the front, for example. And then in behind it, I often say this, but, you know, it's not a bad idea, so I'm going to say it again. It would be nice to put some kumquats. So you could put a couple of kumquats behind it. And in that space, that would be easy to put a couple of kumquats and the rosemary. And you know what? The kumquats are going to flower. They're going to be beautiful. They're going to have this great scent. In spring, from all those little white flowers, they're going to be evergreen. And then they're going to have these little orange little baubles all over them, sort of like jewelry, all over them in fall. And you can pick those little jewels and eat them. That's the way to do it, in my mind. Does that help? Is that a good start? Let me know if that doesn't work, and we'll think of something else. A couple of nice evergreens for full sun. Kumquats and rosemaries.
FM Talk 106.5 with Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast.
call 251-343-0106. Here again is your personal nature expert, Bill Finch.
Yeah. So, we're back. We got a bunch of questions. Our internet is working nicely now.
That's about to say. I was going to update you everything. Our app and our internet are working again. So.
Yep. If y'all heard Steve talking over my shoulder, there we go. I think we're all fine. So app and everything else are in good shape. Sorry about that. There's a power surge. That's kind of, you know, it's probably the winds coming in, maybe. It's getting cold. It's going to get colder. You can call me. We can talk about that. Lots of interesting things. Bruce, yes, I think that's cold damage on your citrus. How can you help those trees? I don't think there's anything you can do at this point. The tree is handling it itself, and it seems to be doing a pretty good job of doing it. You might lose a few branches. I don't really see a lot of reason to actually do anything active right now. It's not pretty, is it? But the tree's growing around it, and it's doing fine. I wouldn't worry about it. I would say that some of those areas may be more vulnerable to breaking off. And you could think about that, but I'm just going to say, let's not make it difficult. Don't do anything. It's fine. The tree's doing it. It's probably the best situation you got. And what else we got? CB Carl has got me a question about a red berried thing. We started talking about red berries. We should talk more about red berries, and probably we will if you will let me before the show's over. And this red berried thing is not a good red berried thing, unfortunately. It's called Artesia crenata, Artesia, and it's a plant that is responding to our warming climate. It used to be you could grow it on the Gulf Coast, and it didn't seem to spread around too much. I think the youngsters would get killed, and it just didn't. But now it's spreading everywhere, and it's a problem. It's getting to be a big problem, Artesia crenata. It's not a true holly. It's not a holly at all. It's native to Japan, the Philippines, warmer areas in those places, and it's a problem. If you can, certainly it's better if you see it in the woods if you pull it up. It's not a good thing. What else we got? So B-Dark is asking me. B-Dark got a lot of questions saved up. Sorry, B-Dark. I'm here. We're back. And she's got a palm that is one of her rescues. And it's a palm that has netting on the trunk. It looks like the trunk has got this little brown burlap netting on it. And that's Trachycarpus. It's one of the windmill palms. This one actually does better in cold temperatures than almost anything. In fact, you'll see it planted even in the northern part of the state, even in Chattanooga. And it does reasonably well there, where it gets quite cold. So you don't have to worry about it being cold. It oddly enough, it's one of the palms, and I've had some Trachycarpus rescues myself. And it's one of those palms that doesn't seem to like our hot weather that much, and it tends to not do as well. So what you're going to find is it's going to take these winters very well. No need to protect it at all. It will grow, and because we've seen them grow, and now that the climate is getting a little warmer in the south and a little warmer in Mobile, we're seeing these plants failing more often than some of the other palms. But yours could grow for many years before you see that. But just to say, it's odd in that among palms, in that it is very cold tolerant, but does not like heat nearly as much as some of the other palms that we tend to grow. Let's see what else we got. Ted is saying, good morning. So much beauty in our natural areas. And he's got some beautiful pictures of Cypress in the Delta. And I think with some of the low water, it's been a little easier to access some of those areas. It's nice to have one of those falls when we do have low water, even if it is from a drought. And you can get into some of the areas that you can't get into as easily in the Delta during summer and spring, and when we have wet winters and wet falls. And so he's looking at the knees are quite common. And, you know, cypress, some cypress have knees. Yeah, the swamp cypress, Taxodium disticum, has knees, whereas pond cypress, Taxodium ascendens, has very fine foliage and doesn't tend to have knees. It's rare, and what's interesting is that pond cypress grows in an area where water doesn't flow as readily, and it's pretty rare that in natural situations that pond cypress would grow in an area where water's flowing. Whereas bald cypress or swamp cypress grows in areas where water is constantly flowing around it. There was a guy that I knew once, and he was an interesting guy, and he said, you know, he was a scientist, but kind of maybe a scientist who speculated beyond what he should have. We all do that sometimes. And he said, oh, you know, I think my idea is that these knees from the cypress developed because they kept the dinosaurs from getting to the foliage, to eat the foliage as readily. Well, okay. And I guess you could venture that thought. It does make it harder if you're a big-footed dinosaur to get to, maybe to the right to the base of the tree, but I don't know. I'm not sure about that. Not sure I think about that's true at all. What I do know is that effectively now, there's all sorts of just-so stories, is what we like to say in evolutionary biology, where people say, oh, well, this tree is evolved to do this. Well, maybe, but it may have, the circumstances that led to the knees may have been very different than what they are now. But what we can say is that here's what the knees do now. They do, in fact, help to gather sediment around those trees, and they do tend to collect sediment a little better and other detritus than if the knees aren't there. So that's a feature, and it is probably the reason why we could say that those knees have persisted for whatever reason that they first developed, that they have persisted because in the swamp situations where bald cypress now tends to grow pretty exclusively in nature, those knees help to gather a little bit more sediment around the base. People used to say they were breathing apparatus. They're not. They don't seem to have any capacity for breathing any better than the rest of the roots. They're not. But they maybe you could imagine that they would be good at collecting sediment and stabilizing the area around the tree, and particularly in an area that's getting a lot of flooding. And maybe even building up the area around that tree so that the soil does tend to be a little better aerated than it would be otherwise, which could certainly help. That probably needs to be tested a little better. But I would say that would be where I would put my bet. That would be where I would put my bet, because it does tend to trap sediment. Does that help the tree? I don't know how you test that, but it's something maybe we could do someday. Be a good thing to do. Let's see. Spelling of the plant on CB. So CB asked about this plant called Ardisia, and I'll come back here. We got a nice little song coming up. Well, I love this song.
I can't hunt and I can't fish, but I can drive you crazy, yes I can. Well, I can't even make a dish, but I can drive you crazy, yes I can.
Welcome back to Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. Questions on conservation, natural history, and gardening? Talk with Bill Finch. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk
106.5. All right, welcome back. It's Gulf Coast Sunday morning, Alabama Sunday morning. So, Ardesia? This is a plant that C.B. Carl was asking about. He saw it in the woods, and this plant's generally no more than waist high. It usually has berries on it. The leaves are evergreen and a bit glossy. They're reminiscent of hollies. They're not hollies at all, not even close. A lot of plants have red berries, and there's some virtues in red berries if you want, for example, birds to be able to see it, because birds really respond to red really well. So they'll take those berries around, and that can be a problem. The A-R-D-I-S-I-A. A-R-D-I-S-I-A. Ardesia. Maybe I shouldn't do the sh on there. Just maybe we'll call it Ardesia, but most people say Ardesia. And it's Ardesia crenata, C-R-E-N-A-T-A. It sometimes has the name Christmas berry. I don't want to call it Christmas berry. I'm just sorry. I don't want to call it Christmas berry for a lot of reasons, because there are a lot of other plants that are called Christmas berry that I think are even better. Traditionally, along the Gulf Coast, Christmas berry was the Lyonia, the tomato relative that grows in the swamp, that's clearly quite delicious. And if you're out on the, if you're out and you find some oysters on the shell mounds out in the middle of Grand Bay, and you take your knife and you, or your screwdriver, and you open an oyster like Ben and I used to do, and you got some Lyonia nearby, native Christmas berry and tomato relative, and you just drop some of those right in there with the oysters. Oh, it's so delicious. So wonderful. It's really great. So I want to reserve that name for Lyonia, but some people call it Christmas berry. It's just, when you look up the name Christmas berry, you're going to get a ton of different things that don't get you there. So we got to have to use the name Ardesia, A-R-D-I-S-I-A, crenata. There's an Ardesia japonica, not invasive, but we rarely see it here. We don't see it as much here. What we're talking about here is Ardesia crenata. Good. Jim is very much involved in his limequat, getting the banana moved will be a huge job. Would it cross-pollinate with the kumquat? No. I can answer that question pretty quickly. But the little yellow fruit next to the orange fruit would be very nice on the kumquat next door. I agree. They would be very nice, and they will taste different. So you have two different things, and probably somewhat more valuable than a banana. Unless you're getting lots of fruit off that banana, but you can always move the banana somewhere else. So there you go. Hope that helped. Good to hear from you, Jim. Let's see. And Don is saying nice things and to everybody. Wants me to relate to everybody that they should have a very good Christmas and very good Christmas period, and that they're all lucky to have family, and that we should honor family. And Don is also reminding that we have to talk about lashing someday. You know, Don is saying, gosh, if you had just told everybody how to lash, they could take their, and how to prune their crepe myrtles to get nice poles out of them. They could take those poles and they could lash them together and they could put them over their young citrus and protect them. And Don is absolutely right. And I we'll probably get into lashing here at some point. Probably not today, because we'll probably run out of time. Because we're getting lots of good questions this morning. And I'm trying to keep up with all of them. What else have I got here that I didn't get to? Back to hollies. And a couple of questions on hollies. And I'm glad that we're back to hollies, because that's how we started the show. There's so many native hollies, and they're so cool, and they're so beautiful. And one of those native hollies, I'll talk about the first one, is Yaupon. And it's an evergreen holly, like Cassine holly, like Dahoon holly, like what I would call the Mobile holly, which is one of these days Angustifolia, which one of these days we'll give it the species name it deserves. It's just some people got to get off their tushes and get to work on it. You know, we're terrible here in the South. We got all these beautiful things, and we don't even give them names, even though Genesis tells you, hey, buddy, that's your job. You got this creation. Now put names on it. You don't believe me? Oh, read the J text. Read the second chapter of Genesis, and you tell me what it says. Tell me if that's not what it says. I ain't putting names on it. It's your job, buddy. Buddy, that means you, the human. So, any rate, we don't put names on these things. We should, and there's so many great. But Yaupon, back to Yaupon, one of the evergreens that is really, and it's really widespread and really quite common. It made the black drink. Yaupon was famous for making the black drink, which was a ceremonial drink for a lot of tribes. It was probably, some other things were added to it, but it had a lot of caffeine, just like coffee. It has a flavor that reminds me of, it's coffee-ish, it's more herbal, it's more like barley. It has a little bit of a barley flavor, but quite nice. A little bit of a tea-like flavor, a little bit of a barley-like flavor, a little bit of a coffee flavor all in one. A really nice drink, the black drink. And it's our native tea, one of our native teas, and a really nice thing. And it comes from these Yaupons. And people who didn't have Yaupons growing in their backyards, like the Cherokee and other tribes, would come down to central Alabama to gather the berries. And I probably got in trouble doing it at times. But it was widely recognized as a very important ceremonial drink. And there's quite a lot of it throughout South and Central Alabama. It's so common that it can be weedy, particularly in the absence of fire. And that can be a problem. You don't want Yaupon to displace everything else. And in certain situations, it can. And many people actually have to go in and whack out Yaupon thickets. And I have seen huge thickets of Yaupon. But it's a beautiful plant, a cool plant, a nice plant for your yard. Nothing wrong with it in your home area, and you don't have to burn it when it's in your yard. You just have to burn it when you're managing large landscapes to keep it at bay. But it's a nice plant, a beautiful plant for your yard. You're not going to have a huge problem with it if you plant it in your yard. It's a nice plant with a long history in the South. Yaupon holly, beautiful holly. So Brian was asking me, where can he go to see some of the hollies I'm talking about? And the deciduous hollies aren't going to survive out on Three Notch. And, you know, gosh, I remember that area as a kid, where there probably weren't a lot of deciduous hollies out there, even in those days. It's not exactly the right habitat. You're more likely to see it along stream banks. You're more likely to see it along the delta. Deciduous holly, you'll see a lot of it along the edges of the delta, particularly in some of the clay soils. You'll see it along Fowl River even. And that's in those kinds of areas, you're more likely to see it than on the sand hills. But you will see lots of Yaupon on those sand hills. And it will not lose its leaves. The berries will be smaller, but they're really glassy, glossy. And in fact, Mr. Dodd and John Giordano and John Allen Smith and my good friend Morten Vandergeesen and a lot of other folks used to go through those areas selecting hollies because there were so many good Yaupon hollies. And there was one that we found on the edge of an old International Paper site, and we had to give it a name, and so we gave it the name. It was Yellow Holly. And John Giordano gave it the name, International Paper being right next door, IP Yellow. Any rate, we've got these great little hollies. Inside horticultural joke there. That are out there, the Yaupon hollies everywhere. Did that help? Is that enough to talk about the Yaupons and where you can look for them? And it's great to see them and to know that they're good things and they can be too good at times. They spread around a little bit. And there's all these other wonderful hollies as well, many of which lose their leaves. And boy, what a great time to see them now. Up in the Red Hills and along the roadsides and even along the interstates going up to Montgomery, if you look carefully, even the road crews haven't succeeded in destroying them. Road crews will succeed in destroying everything of any value except for Kogon and Kudzu. But you'll still see them, and it's really wonderful as you're getting up into the Black Belt, just south of Montgomery. If you'll look for them on the sides of the road right now with those leaves, this winter's going to strip those leaves off, and you're going to see these bright red berries covering the roadsides, not right next to the road, but back along the fence rows where the road crews can't get to and the mowers can't get to them. Boy, I hate to see the mowers coming. Because it's just like we don't have any plan for that, and we could be thoughtful about it. Never mind, I didn't mean to go there. But the mowers aren't getting to those, and they're beautiful, and they're along the roadsides, and they're really going to show up now. They're all in the Red Hills as well. Look for those. They're really, really nice. Really nice. I hope I'm answering your questions this morning. If I didn't get to you, if we didn't quite get to it, I'm interested in the question about the 5x7 full 5x7 bed. Did I answer that question in the right way? If there's so many possibilities, I tried to focus on the things I thought you'd have space for, and put the rosemaries in front near where they're getting the sun. They have to be the front, meaning the sunny side, because they're not going to get as tall, and put those kumquats behind. Is that good? Is that the kind of thing you're looking for? There's some other evergreens you can put in there. I would, even some azaleas would do fine there. Some of the old southern Indian azaleas would do fine. But how neat to be able to eat some of that. Ooh, wouldn't that be nice? All right, we'll be back.
FM Talk 106.5, home for plain living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with Bill Finch. Call 251-343-0106.
All right. Welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning, Alabama Sunday morning. Well, we've kind of gone through the gamut this morning. It's going to be cold enough that you might worry a little bit about some plants. Again, plants that are particularly tender, like citrus. Because we push the limits of citrus here, and we do well at times, but we have to be thoughtful about it. I'll kind of go through the litany of citrus again. The citrus that are very easy for us are things like kumquats. I would say it's possible we'll have a freeze someday, cold enough to really do a to really severely damage kumquats. But that's, I could almost bet that won't happen. I almost feel safe betting that that won't happen. It's a good, it's a good solid plant for us. It's very hardy. Now, in Huntsville, even in Huntsville, I would say I might consider kumquat in a protected place. Certainly, I would consider it in Birmingham. And it's protected, a little more protection. Maybe you treat it up there like you would treat a satsuma, covering it on some really cold times until it got a little bigger. So there's kumquats, and then there's calamondin, which is in there too, and it's pretty tough. Pretty cold hardy, not quite as cold hardy as kumquats, but it's getting close, and right there close by is satsumas. They're remarkably cold hardy, but only down to about 14, 15 degrees. Below that, you're almost certainly going to see some pretty severe damage. And the tree may survive if you do the right things, and even if you don't do the right thing, the tree may survive, but you're going to see a lot of damage at 14 to 15 degrees. And maybe even a little warmer if the tree hasn't gotten acclimated to the cold. So there you go. We start out at kumquats, very cold tolerant. We go up to calamondins, which is a great little tree, a great little fruit. I love it. I love calamondins. And maybe limequats are in there too. Lemonquats are in there probably too. And certainly satsumas. And they're right there. And then above that, just a little bit are clementines. Clementines are not quite as hardy as the satsumas, but they're pretty hardy. They're pretty tough. They're pretty good. And again, down to maybe 18, 17, 16, 17, 18 degrees. Few degrees less tolerant of cold than satsumas. And then above that, we get into the oranges. And oranges are, they're a little more sensitive. A little more sensitive to cold. And generally, I would say you want to keep the temperatures above 20 degrees for oranges. And here's a couple of things to think about when it comes to oranges. Some oranges take a long time for the fruit to really develop good flavor. And they're usually at their best in January and February. May develop a little sooner here because of the cooler temperatures, but generally, and that's things like navel oranges and that group that are grown in the typical citrus growing areas. If you're growing oranges, I always recommend that you look for some of our native oranges. Native is not the right word. Some of the oranges that have a long tradition here along the Gulf Coast, like Hamlin, H-A-M-L-I-N, if you can find it ever again. And Louisiana Sweet, which is probably virtually identical to Hamlin. Those are some really great. Parson Brown, I think is his name, is another old orange that's quite good for us. These are a little hardier than some of the typical oranges, and they develop their flavor by December, which is just in time, as Kitty would like to say, for Christmas presents, and really great. So those are great oranges, and very sweet, really sweet. I mean, really great. And they were the oranges that I think traditionally along the Gulf Coast we used for, if we were making ambrosia for Christmas, this is what we used. They're great for that. They're perfect for that. And if your ambrosia is not what you think it should be, it's because we're probably not using the right oranges anymore. Because we quit growing the oranges that grow really well here, and we decided we're going to get all our oranges from California. But Hamlin's great. And then the navels and the others, they're less cold tolerant. And then there's grapefruit, which are less cold tolerant than the rest of them. It tends to be more vulnerable. Now, people will have grapefruits in the right area, and they will survive and produce grapefruits. And I'm not saying they can't, but it's not the trees that I would choose first, because they are more vulnerable. And then above that are lemons and limes. And lemons and limes are super, super tender. And I just don't recommend putting them in the ground. They're great for pots. They're great for containers. Now, there's some things we got to fill in there. There's blood oranges. And blood oranges, I think, are better in containers for reasons we talked about earlier in the show. They're less hardy than some of the other oranges, for sure. And then there's weird hybrids like Meyer's lemons, which are not lemons at all, but in fact, they're probably hybrids between lemons and satsumas. Maybe oranges, satsumas somewhere in there, mandarins. And they are hardier as a result. And under certain circumstances, they'll survive colder temperatures than some of the other, certainly than lemons and limes. So there's kind of your hierarchy of cold and what you need to think about. And the higher you are on that scale of least cold tolerance, the more you got to think about protecting those plants. And so there it is. Jim in Georgetown is saying his kumquat survived below 10 degrees last winter. Only damage was the fruit fell off. And, you know, I'm even surprised at that. They are super tough, those little kumquats. And a really cool thing. It's a beautiful picture of cardinal flower coming from the Delta. From Ted. Does that help, Ted? Cardinal flower. Lobelia cardinalis. Glad you got to see that. You didn't see that. Did you see that this? You didn't see that recently, did you? That's interesting. B-Dark is going to take us out here. She says, it's going to be a three-dog night around here. And it is going to be cold. Make sure your pipes don't freeze. Disconnect your hose. It's cold enough that your hose will actually freeze and burst in these temperatures. So be sure to connect that. I don't think the pipes under your house are going to freeze unless you just have totally exposed pipes. But it's going to be cold tonight. You might want to cover some plants, too. We'll be back next week.
I'm living in the garden again, and I'll keep on praying with two dirty hands. Living.